shuffle.
Kill, kill, kill.
Kill, kill, kill.
Kill shuffle.
Hello and welcome to another episode of Kill Shuffle.
Hello.
It's great to see you. How
it's
you
great
doing?
To see me and you and everybody.
And you, dear listener. My name is
Lorenzo. I'm Lorenzo. I'm forget the storm you're coming for.
Forget about Storm Lorenzo. Storm Lorenzo barely happened. Although, you know, to be fair, it did hit the west coast of Ireland.
Yeah, but the mountains slapped it out of the way.
Yeah!
They slapped it.
Us coast dwellers were okay. I'm Donal.
I'm Dylan.
And we've got a packed show for you here today. We are going to be talking about new albums from Blink-182, Nervous, Squarehead, and Tides from Nebula, along with a look back at The Cure's 1989 album Disintegration.
The greatest album ever, according to Stan from South Park.
Oh, Stan from South Park, yeah, yeah.
Yes.
I was going to say, but possibly someone inspired by my recent foray into seeing them live in America.
And my realization that we should have done this 3 years ago when you were going off like the essentials, like the big, of the big ones of each genre, which we kind of went through so far, but this is up there.
I kind of like that we dip into random bands that no one's ever heard of, or, you know, recent releases. But I like tackling the classics, because for sure this was not an album I was at all familiar with. No, I didn't say it all, but I knew a couple of the singles. But yeah, we'll talk about it later on in the show. Any orders of business to get to before we kick into the reviews, Dill? Have you, you know, any musical adventures you've had in the last couple of weeks?
Not yet. All I know is next week in Vicar Street is going to be Ninja Sex Party and Tupperware Remix Party.
Twerp. Oh, snap. They're playing support.
Playing support and with them, because they're backing band as well. And I think Planet Booty is the opener band.
Planet Booty.
They're Canadian as well, so that's going to be interesting.
I'm actually kind of good at it. I won't be able to see TWRP.
That's okay.
What night is that?
It's
Saturday?
Friday.
Ah, I will be seeing Pulled Apart by Horses on Friday, which I'm very excited about. I want to punch some lions in the throat and have a little bit of a dance. Sure. And I'll also be seeing Squarehead before we record our next album, which we obviously will be talking about Squarehead later in the show, because we're reviewing their new album. But I went to see Mark Lewisohn talk about Abbey Road last night, which was fascinating.
I'm sure.
The dude has written probably at this point in the region of about 4,000 or 5,000 published pages about the Beatles. And his current book is over 1,000 pages long, and it covers the Beatles up until the release of their first album. So it doesn't even, none of their recorded output, just prehistory and family history and Hamburg. Yeah. So super interesting. Guy can really spin a tale and told us all, you know, all of the extra little bits and pieces that you might not know about Abbey Road. So that was great. And funnily enough, he had access to the root files for the Beatles Rock Band, which meant that he was able to maybe present the songs.
Stems.
Yeah, he was able to use stems to present the songs with, say, vocals a cappella for a couple of minutes, and then with just bass and guitar, drums, just to highlight maybe some of the more musically interesting moments on the album that get lost in the main mix. So it was a great night, although there was a little bit of technical difficulty with his PowerPoint. They had to call an early interval because PowerPoint was acting the dick.
They always do.
Which it tends to do. But Mark Lewisohn, highly recommend you check him out. Maybe listen to an interview with him on a podcast, because if you don't have time to read a 1,000-page book. So that was great. But apart from that, no, I don't have anything else. So I think we should launch straight in with
the most relevant band of this century.
The biggest. I tend to agree.
Of this year.
One of the biggest bands in the world, and the biggest release of the week, 9 by Blink-182. From Poway, California. And believe it or not, the band got together in 1992. I'm not saying their first album took a few years to come out, but that's still very impressive. So they're coming up on, they're 25 years and change. Now that would be Hoppus. That's just Hoppus.
Just Hoppus.
Yeah. But you know, Hoppus and DeLong, if you want to kind of get specific about it, and then Travis Barker came in later.
Yes.
So the current incarnation of Blink-182 consists of Mark Hoppus on bass, Matt Skiba of the Alkaline Trio on guitar and vocals.
Who would have thought that?
Yeah, and then obviously the prodigiously talented Travis Barker on drums. And 9, as the title might suggest, is their 9th album.
And I'd assume Lil Peep or Lil Wayne or somebody pulling some kind of strings. Some miniature pop star, R&B star, I don't know.
Well, on one of the tracks there, I believe it's, I think it's Blaming on My Youth, which makes sense. I think they had a collaborator who had previously worked with hip-hop artists for sure, like Cardi B and Post Malone and stuff like that. A lot of collaborators on this album. Most of the tracks, all of the tracks feature producer John Feldmann as a co-writer.
There's two producers technically, right?
Feldmann produced everything, but there were collaborating producers on some of the tracks, yes. Mainly there was a guy called... didn't write his name down because he didn't interest me, but his name I think was Tim, and he'd worked with a band called Neon Trees.
I'd imagine Travis Barker had a good hand in it this time.
Yes, he did.
As he is known to explore the R&B realm with his finger in every pie.
Absolutely, and he was one of the main architects behind Fever 333, for example. Him and Feldmann were... two of the production team on that record too.
Interesting.
So John Feldmann, just for starters, obviously has an interesting record, member of Goldfinger, seminal sort of pop, early pop punk band, and he's worked with some, I think, really good artists like Beartooth or Fever 333. He's also worked with some seriously dodgy artists like Black Veil Brides, 5 Seconds of Summer, All Time Low. So basically the dude is kind of, I would say, the if you want to call Jerry Finn maybe the grandfather of pop punk, John Feldmann is like the godfather, I guess.
If you want something to sound like something he's done before, you'll get it.
Yeah.
And then some. Right?
But, you know...
from any genre.
But I think, just to say it right off the bat, I think this album sounds really good. I have no qualms at all with the production. I think the production sounds good. The only thing I would say right off the bat is I think... I have one qualm, which is that I don't think that Travis is as prominent as he could be.
No.
That's all I'd say.
If anything, Travis would be the last qualm I have on this
album.
In fact, he is the outlier of... he's the saving grace in some ways.
Oh, right, okay.
Well,
before I get off this point, just that I think Travis, again, he always puts in an incredible performance, and what a cycle he's had in terms of all of his issues with the staph infection and blood clots, and... he's obviously had multiple major accidents, and his recovery from those has been well documented. But, you know, dude was off the road on doctor's orders as recently as a year ago, I think.
Yes.
So to hear him in such fine fettle is fantastic. I don't know what it is, because even listening with a keen ear, I didn't feel like it's obviously Travis, and he's got some fantastic moments on this album, which we'll discuss, but... overall, I feel like it wasn't as much of a showcase for him as previous Blink-182 records have been.
And that's true.
Just to get
I agree with that.
Yeah.
But he's he serves the songs. He has to serve what songs they go for, I guess.
Yeah.
And that doesn't totally work this time around.
Okay, so I'm getting the sense that you are less enamored of this album. You
more quite... so than California.
Okay, interesting. Because I remember we did discuss, if not the original California, we folded it into a conversation about the B-sides album that came out later.
And
you said, you weren't super into California.
Yeah.
What's the last Blink-182 album that holds a space in your heart, I guess?
Neighborhoods.
Okay, cool.
Yeah.
I love Neighborhoods too. Yeah. But I'm you know, just to right off the bat, like, I kind of love everything they've done since Enema of the State. Prior to Enema of the State, I just didn't think that the songwriting or the sonics or the production
was there. Well, to be said, I love them in different intervals.
Yeah.
Plus 44 is Travis and Mark.
It's great.
I fucking love that Plus album 44. To bits.
Love it. And I like everything I've heard of Boxcar Race, so I just haven't given it the time. But, you know, people shit on this band a lot, and I think that's wrong. I think they're phenomenal songwriters, and I actually really liked California. So as far as I'm concerned, they're at this point maybe 5 for 5 or 6 for 6. But tell me what you think about 9.
Is that including the EPs?
No.
Okay.
It's including the nine. Mark put up a post on Instagram about this. The 9 is Butta, Cheshire Cat, Dude Ranch, Enema of the State, Take Off Your Pants and Jacket, self-titled, Neighborhoods, California, 9.
Okay.
There you go. I got it. Whoa, off the top of the dome, by the way. Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. Because the first thing you hear is kind of a plug-in to the amps.
Yeah.
Yeah. That would send like a very kind of garage band kind of feel, a sensibility,
yeah,
if you will.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd say like 3 seconds later, it's not. it's more so in the vocal department. It kind of went to, oh wow, this is auto-tuned and very, very compressed. Very, very compressed off the bat. Where I felt almost like I was listening to it in a reverb shell of like triple plastic. Just, right. It felt really kind of... Like
Technicolor, like the cover, I guess. It's bold and brash and shiny, no question about it. Yeah.
But oddly enough, not for Skiba's vocals.
Skiba!
It really hits my ears when Skiba's singing, which is odd because I love Skiba in his own band.
Oh.
Yeah, I love how he sings in his own band.
Oh, it's funny, I thought you were going to say... I think he really gives it socks in his album.
I always thought Mark was a competent singer. Like that's just how it is. I do hear auto-tune in his vocals, which is kind of weird.
I'm not sure that now for effect. No, hang on. For effect, there's certain sections, mostly towards the second half of the album, where in the backing vocal, where there's obvious pitch correction going on.
Yeah, it's
but it's, not in the main vocal. There's nothing beyond what you hear on every other band.
Yeah,
the vocal. It's affected. It's compressed. It's double tracked. But I don't. There's no obvious pitch correction. Not to the Lil Wayne extent or the T-Pain extent.
No, not quite.
Or even to the extent of
it's the same.
I'm not sure. I totally agree. I mean, well, Skiba's vocal anyway, for the most part, is too gravelly. It's too pained, for want of a better word. Like
for that,
yeah. But for that effect to even apply, because it glitches out when you use it on that type of vocal.
It just feels it.
I disagree.
It's
right
there.
Right off the bat, it's not.
It's there. As the audio guy, you should detect that. Holy shit.
I break in at a hives when I hear unnecessary pitch correction
for
in
Skiba,
songs.
Yeah.
It drives me crazy. If you want a great example of an album that has unnecessary pitch correction, S&M by Metallica. I swear to God, so frustrating. I do notice it. This is just...
They don't need it.
It could be quadruple tracked.
I want to see all the words.
I don't know. Right? We're just gonna have to.
I mean,
I agree that the vocals are.
It's like they're writing the pop album that they need to write, and they can't afford to make it sound as polished as it could possibly be, in which it is. It's super polished. I'll give it that. It sounds super polished, and production's pretty good.
Yeah, pretty It's good. Apart from, like I said, I think the drums are a little bit muffled or something, but. But to get beyond the sort of maybe the surface level, so fair enough, you feel like the vocals definitely are overly processed. Which
it's just that the little plug-in effect at the very start, that got me. I was like, that sends different things to my brain.
I hear where you're coming from, but I think there's quite a driving riff in that first song, the first time where you do that do-do-da-da-da-do-da-da. So I know people kind of say, okay, well, it gets a little cheesy and there's a big flange effect after they pull the plug. You expect when you hear that plug-in effect that there's immediately going to be a big crashing guitar. But, you know, a big riff does come in like 2 seconds later.
That's true.
So, but whatever. Maybe it wasn't the best move to have the guitar plugging into the amp effect. I totally concede that. But what I will say about the first time is, you know, first couple times I heard it, I was thinking, this is a little bit of a throwaway Blink track. But the more I listen to it, A, I think it's a really fantastically well-written pop song. But B, the lyrics are, if you actually really listen to them, are kind of terrifying because it's such an upbeat major key song and the lyrics are a very kind of slightly depressing depiction of addiction and the cycle of addiction and sort of the guy's yearning for the first, you know, the first high or the first time you take a drug or the first time you meet somebody. But it is about the cycle of addiction. And I suppose this whole album, just to kind of take it in a broader context, what I like about this album is it's not that Blink haven't done dark material. They've been doing dark material pretty much certainly on a regular basis since Untitled.
This album doesn't have any, you know, bestiality-centric songs or fucking dogs in the ass.
Exactly.
Which they've gone down in history as as I've done in there.
But California lyrically was a very generally there was exceptions, but a lot of the songs were about kind of youthful abandon. It were very positive. It was looking back with rose tinted glasses, whereas this album is lyrically very dark.
Yeah, it's still youthful in a way that it's kind of like a cautionary tale for the younger audience in which they're going for now, which is a lot younger than us. It probably really appeals to 15-year-olds, I would say.
I wish.
15 to 18 would be the moment I'd be over this.
If 15 to 18-year-old kids are into Blink, then that's a good thing as far as I'm concerned.
But as simple as Mark's vocals, sometimes the melodies can be, the message is good.
Yeah.
And it's tough to get out, I'm sure.
Because it's easy to, you know, it's easy to praise lyrics like, just to pick a couple of random examples, like, you know, Simon Neill or Paul Smith from Maximum Park. Guys that, you know, that are almost poets, where they write these really angular, obscure lyrics that, you know, can be really impressive and very affecting. But I think there's also something to be said for treading common ground, but doing it in a way that I've never heard before. And I think Hoppus is really good at doing that. He's actually really good at needling into universal themes, not necessarily through clever wordplay, but just I think he really sounds like he means it on a lot of tracks. Like on Pin the Grenade, where he's talking about, if you don't love me, lie to my face. You know, if you're going to kill me, please do it slow. Needles at the lizard brain. Yeah, a little bit.
Some of it is still seems a little emotionally undeveloped for where they are actually in life.
Okay.
it definitely sounds a bit convoluted, or not convoluted. It seems like they've been treading that wheel for quite a while. And they don't they really don't need to. I think the latter part of Blink's career has been that. Trying to meddle back to a millennial mindset, which, as much as Mark, can be at times, he's not. I know he's in touch with he has kids, of course, so he has to be in that mindset. But still, I think it's a bit much.
Yeah, I mean, I agree. There is certainly one moment on the album where I definitely agree with that. I think
a lot of modern pop stars have that too.
Yeah,
where they're reaching their mid-40s, late 40s, and it kind of sounds like a lie.
I hear that point brought up a lot, and I'm not necessarily sure I agree, but
we're not totally a lie, but just disingenuous.
I think on some emo shit, which is towards the end of the album, it's this weird song where he's trying to paint a picture of New York City, but it sounds really pandery and kind of awkward and clumsy, and I don't think it works.
Oh, it reminds me of the R&B stuff.
That the
producers know of, Travis knows of, and I'm not sure about the others, but you know, it's there, and it's they're totally going for that.
Meanwhile,
abandoning all else.
I think Blame It On My Youth is just about catchy enough to skate by on the fact that it is, of the whole record, it's definitely the one where it feels the most focus grouped. Definitely. You know, that, like, and when I heard that single, I kind of thought, oh no.
Kind of a real stick in the mud. When it's in between Generation Divide and Dark Side.
Well, that's not a mistake, I don't think.
Well, it's just like, where the fuck is this coming from? Because Dark Side is fucking catchy.
Yeah, it's catchy.
Generation Divide is has been memed before. There's a guy who did a 3-minute extended version of it.
No way.
He put his own parts in, produced just as well, just to make it last 3 minutes, and it...
Yeah. I mean, Generational Divide recalls maybe Cynical or Bohemian Rhapsody or one of those tracks off the last album, which is just, it's so short, but the actual blasts of genuine, you know,
I know,
visceral sort of punk energy.
It's
what
we wanted a bit more from Travis, was that.
Yeah.
And it is here in a Bit of Black Rain, Bit of Ransom.
Well, Black Rain, I absolutely love, because it goes almost into
almost absolutely love it.
There's almost sort of a math rocky feel to that verse, where everything is chopping and changing.
Yeah, it's compression working for itself,
working really well.
That's the compression I like to see.
Yeah, That's this album's Los Angeles, I think. Or maybe, you know, pick an earlier example, like that MH4811 or whatever. Yeah, yeah. It's, in other words, like Black Rain, I love because it's like the alternative rock song on the album of maybe more sort of pop punky stuff. And it's super catchy. Like, the thing about this album is, whatever else you think about it, almost every song, you can look at the title and go, yep, you immediately, that hook has burrowed its way into your brain.
You can piece out the songs. I particularly like the chorus from Heaven quite a bit. Like,
oh, me too.
Quite a lot. Not just the kind of the milquetoast feel I feel from a lot of this album. But that was very interesting. I thought the chord changes are really interesting in the chorus, and just, it works so well. I just wish the album could live up to that. It kind of does.
The chorus on that song is a great example of a really, really solid Hoppus lyric in terms of Angel Wings at the Bus Stop, Halo Left on Top of the Bar. Super simple.
Yeah, that's...
But when he sings it with the kind of compassion he does, and, you know, and he just... I don't know, there's something really... affecting, I think, about that image, and coupled, as you say, with a really nice chord progression, I think that song does the thing that I love, where it's half time for most, and then the last chorus is double time.
Yeah,
you know, which adds a huge blast of energy. I think it's a really, really good song.
Dark Side is great. The only problem I have with it is a big problem, and you wouldn't know it unless you've seen the music video.
Oh. I haven't.
it's just them playing in a school gym.
Okay.
With tons of kids. The main focus of the video is solely tons of kids doing Fortnite dances around them.
Yeah.
I kind of get what that is, but I hate it. I hate every fiber of it.
Okay.
And I know I'm not a father who has to put up with their kid doing Fortnite dances and is totally acclimated to it, but my God.
But you can imagine that his kids probably think he's the coolest dad on earth.
It's pure visual cancer.
Yeah, I hear you. But at the end of the day, you know,
to a song that is not that.
No, and I think that song, I like that song. It's super catchy. But I think it's melodically,
it's not flossing. It's not doing the flossing dance.
No, no.
Lyrically, it ain't as well.
No,
there's nothing to. I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, that song could be Lady Gaga in an alternative universe, actually, with different instrumentation. But yeah, you know, like you said, he's a father. I think he kind of embraces being like a dorky dad. And that's sort of, I don't know, I almost feel like that's sort of the natural progression from them like running down the highway in their underwear. It's like the 2019 version. Do you know what I mean?
Well, I think there's a difference between embracing being a goofy dad than being a millennial yourself and not maturing as, I don't know, fucking, you know, the band's some Skiba's in, for example. He's matured greatly in that band.
Yeah.
Especially with the last album.
In Alkaline Trio?
Yeah, Alkaline, yeah. Mm. I think...
But then again, he was like, I want to fuck a plane, you know, so yeah.
So, yeah. Come on.
In the most, you know, cool, gothy way possible, just one last highlight from me. I think Hung Over You is, when we're talking about maybe some of the pitfalls / some of the triumphs of Blink dipping their toe into the 2019 Sonics, I think Hung Over You is an absolute triumph. I think it works perfectly. It does have a bit of a 2019 pop production.
It really does.
But hey, that doesn't bother me.
I would almost say
de facto,
it's an implosion of an ender.
You don't like that song? Are you serious?
Not too much.
I
think some of the chorus is cool. Some of the guitar work is nice.
Oh man, I think the vocal performance on that chorus, the fact that it's Skiba and Skiba does it with the Skiba scream, basically the Skiba sort of shriek. And then Hoppus comes in. I didn't think you could hit those notes. Yeah. Whatever you might say, can't do it live, that's fine. But it sounds to me like
I'm not discrediting his vocals. It's just,
I
think his vocals clash with Blink-182.
It's full on
clash.
I'm just way too much of a Blink apologist. I can appreciate that this isn't the best album they've ever done. There are moments, but few of them, not many of them, but there are moments on this album where I kind of go, all right, come on, get to the point. Or, you know, okay, this is clearly a little bit too much. You've listened to the co-writers a little bit too much here. But overall, I have a fantastic time from start to finish. I love all three members of the band, and that includes Matt Skiba, because I really love Alkaline Trio. Mm. So, Maybe I'm not the best placed person to review this, but I had a lovely time. And you know what I love too? Because speaking about Travis, whatever you might say, whatever I might say about maybe feeling like he's slightly underutilized, there are two tracks on this album where I think it's No Heart to Speak Of, and then maybe one other track, possibly Hungover You, where Travis gets a fairly meaty drum break right at the end, Untitled style, where there's, you know, atmospheric synthesizers, kind of creepy, blippy, bloopy stuff, and then Travis just gets to beat the shit out of the drum kit.
Yeah, I know the part,
And that's cool. Very much appreciated, because we haven't heard that since.
But it's a trash song.
Which song?
Much payoff.
No Heart to Speak Of?
Yeah.
Oh man, we listen. I don't know. I feel like we listen to different albums. I absolutely love that song.
Yeah.
Wow.
Just a lot of the melodies don't hit for me. Like,
yeah.
The first time's chorus melody, as much as you say the lyrics are, what depth they do have, I think the melody is very much that kind of three keys on a keyboard feel.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm trying to think. Actually, the pre-chorus is the only thing that comes to mind. Actually, I'm thinking of the first time. I mean, maybe that is a good example for you to pick then. I do, lyrically I was more enamored of that song, but anyway, I think then I get the sense so you really must not have liked California then.
No.
So as far as you're concerned, this is like a little like they're climbing up out of the well, but they're slipping down a little.
It's an identity crisis.
Okay.
Dude, listen to it.
To it many times,
like between I Really Wish I Hated You and Generational Divide, if that isn't an identity crisis, I don't know what is.
Yeah, I don't
like a tonal schism.
What
like,
I hear is
without a doubt.
I just hear like three guys, all of whom, particularly Travis and Mark, who are tapped into what's happening, and they like playing punk rock music, they like pop music, they love writing pop songs, and it's all just kind of blended into this album where maybe not everybody's gonna go home happy, but
it's all right.
I don't know. Like I said, I'm a Mark. Maybe I'm not the best person to review this because I just seem to really like that sound. And it's not something that I'm not a pop punk guy. I hardly ever listen to the genre.
I mean, I kind of am. I mean, like, fucking Man with a Mission. You know how much I love
that.
That's
not really. Is that pop punk?
I think these guys kind of go for it a bit.
Yeah.
With like that Black Rain feel.
Yeah,
it's kind of it's with Man with a Mission. I like the way they do compression.
Like, I don't even like Green Day. I find them super annoying.
Oh, that Ayla single. Oh my god.
Well, that's another story. I mean, that's an abomination.
Yes.
But I mean, classic. I don't even like Dookie or anything. I just find them, you know, really annoying. And name another. There's other big Offspring. Blah, like, I like three songs. is there any other super big ones?
Oh yeah, you know that era. That era.
Yeah, or even pick like a NoFX or the Descendants or
Goldfinger, for example.
Goldfinger. I don't care. None of it really does anything for me, actually. And I don't like those first three Blink albums because I just think they're super basic and too scrappy and they sound like shit. But as soon as they, and that's, you people love them, but as soon as they hooked up with Jerry Finn and started writing pop songs, really huge and, you know, stadium sized pop songs with big guitars, that was when I got on board.
I mean, they are.
Yeah.
I think they've always transcended that, and everything becomes stadium when you're that big.
That's exactly, even like Damn It and Carousel became stadium in retrospect.
Yeah, I mean, the first time I was essentially just feeling this with a different coat. For me at least, it just feels like that.
Yeah, no, you're absolutely
dead
right.
And I think that's exactly what they're going for.
Yep.
With the whole plug-in thing, this is nostalgia, this is a GarageBand feel.
Yep.
But it's not that. This is not. If you're looking for a scrappy Blink, this ain't it.
God no, and to be honest with you, I'm kind of glad they've left that behind. But
if you're of the little Peep kids, then this is the album for you.
Is Lil Peep actually a person?
Yeah.
Okay. Sorry, I thought you were pulling out of your back pocket.
A lot of his like.
Okay.
Like I'm kind of an R&B guy now, and I'm over the pop punk shit. That's kind of the feel I get from him and the lot.
Yeah. Okay. No.
This is Blink 182 coming ever so closer to that uncomfortable line.
Yeah.
I would say quite a lot of this album is that, but a lot of it's still fun to listen to.
I had a great time.
A lot of it's still kind of like end of Tom DeLonge era Blink, kind of.
Yeah, that's the thing, is all people talk about.
But it only just makes me yearn for that. It doesn't make me look forward to the future.
I went into this with my expectations rock bottom, and I can only tell you how I feel about it. I actually really like it, so you know, it is what it is. I know this album has come in for a real, real kicking in certain quarters, but
oh yeah,
I like it a lot. So, sure. Do you have a favorite track? What is your favorite track?
You know. I really wish they made those short songs long. I feel
you can pick one of them.
I feel that's just taunting the audience. Like, here are the most punk rock songs we will not really give you much of. and here's just fuck it.
Like, yeah, Ransom is the other one.
That's all you'll get. Heaven is mine. Heaven is my favorite.
Okay, yeah, Heaven's a great show.
Right next to Black Rain.
I'll take Hung Over You. Thank you very much. Excellent. So. That is 9 by Blink-182. I'm going to give it
5.
Oh, okay. Yeah. So it's a 5 from Dill.
Because it's half of the album I like. It's kind of. It's maybe like 4. I'd give it a 4 if it wasn't for Tom's or Travis's drumming. Okay. Bring it up all in notch. Always. He's spectacular. He's a genius.
He is. He is a phenomenal drummer. So it's a 5 from Dill. Well, don't you know it? It's an 8 from me.
Okay, yeah. I thought you were going to give it a 9. Oh. I would have been terrified for...
Yeah, for albums coming down the line.
For amazing albums, probably. I don't know. Who knows?
Hey, no. I mean, I know it's not a 9, but I think this is a 4-star album. As far as I'm concerned, it's an 8. I really like it a lot.
That's cool.
So that's Blink-182. Next up, just to pivot to something else, let's do Tides from Nebula.
Yeah.
This album is called From Voodoo to Zen. It is the fifth album. Yeah, it's interesting. I sort of jarred me at the start. Now I get it and I like it. That was called From Voodoo to Zen. It's their fifth album. They are a trio, as I say, from Poland. Their names, I'm not sure if you want me to try and butcher them. I'll go for first names. I think it's Tomasz, Maciej, and Przemek. Possibly, or I could have completely butchered them.
We could go with that.
The three of them split duties on drums, guitar, bass, and then they all play synth. And the synth is really what roars out of the traps on this album and does not stop.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
mm-hmm.
Yeah, yeah,
yeah. Mm-hmm.
You know what I feel like a total idiot for doing?
From not knowing this band.
For not seeing this band live when I had the opportunity to at Arctangent.
Oh, fuck, really?
They were one of the channels on the Silent Disco. So you could tune into the Mars Volta channel, you could tune into the whoever DJ was there, but there was actually Tides from Nebula were there playing a live set, and you could click your headphones over to them and
your brain would just explode, I'd imagine.
Yeah, I mean, I was in bed. I'm that much of a dry shite. I went to the bed and I missed it. And now I'm sorry I did, because if they were playing anything from this album, I would have had a lovely time.
Yeah.
Thank you for bringing this one in.
I quite enjoy this band and their output quite a bit. like to the extent I'm like, I wish I wrote this. I really wish I wrote this music.
Right.
I wish I was the one to come up with this song.
Well, what if you...
It's that kind of band.
What if you kill them and steal their skin?
I mean, that works too.
And wear it as a coat.
They won't know any. They won't know any better.
Will they transfer their powers to you?
Probably, but
yeah.
That's a size.
How did you come across these guys?
Through Spotify.
Ah,
yeah, it was mixed quite a while back.
Okay.
Can't remember what it was related to, but it was just synthy stuff.
Yeah. Yeah, it's very interesting because first of all, guys, with all the love in the world, now that I know the music, it's fine, but. The title really, sorry, not the title, the name of the band really made me think that these were going to be your typical sort of tech, gentcore, instrumental, boring, like, you know, a band that's called like the Parallax Industry or something, you know?
Mm-hmm. Space age stuff can always fall.
Yeah, I just thought it was going to be boring, generic, sort of techie, genty, instrumental metal. And it's not that at all. It's,
well, Tides from Nebula is fantastic. Have you ever seen, like, was it Interstellar or what was that?
I've seen Interstellar.
It was the one with that the planet they go on is
yeah.
Nebula, and that's the one with the waves. And
yeah, it's just the name. I don't know. Now that I know the music, it's fine. But just, you know, look, scrolling through a playlist, it's quite generic. Mm-hmm. But the music is very different to what I was expecting. It's primarily, I would say, it's primarily electronic. Similarly to how we were talking about Infinity Shred, actually, a couple of weeks ago. Yeah. There are moments on this album which are quite reminiscent, but then most of it is, it's totally its own thing. Because it's a much more mid-tempo... Meaty, yeah.
Colossal.
Churning.
That's the feeling you get from it.
Nightmare Factory.
Yeah. Colossal and very, not theatrical, but it has that feeling.
Yeah, it certainly has a cinematic quality to it.
Yeah, cinematic, yes.
Definitely, definitely.
Much like Pendulum have had with some of their like real amping up tracks.
Yep.
That kind of feel.
Nero came to mind.
Yeah, yeah.
I think I felt like Nero meets God as an astronaut. If you can kind of imagine that, I think it's, you're not a million miles off.
Not a million miles off.
There's a little bits of Kavinsky, little bits of Mutiny on the Bounty that we like.
Yes.
Even little bits of things like Porter Robinson, I think. Like that quite saw wave, like upbeat electronic music with a tinge of sadness to it. When they go upbeat on tracks like Dopamine, you know, there is a little bit of that, I think.
Yeah.
Although a lot of this album is more slow to mid-tempo, kind of, yeah.
Vamping tracks, just...
Just, yeah, that just kind of real, flow.
Yeah, it does flow incredibly well.
Mm.
It's almost like a continuous thing that you really are anticipating.
Yeah.
Like, it feels like a fucking, I don't know, like one of those epic movies. Name a director. The Dark Knight, what's his name?
Oh, sorry. Jonathan...
Inception. It feels like that kind
of
constant
No, I know who flow. You're talking about. Fucking, wow, that's really bad. We're the worst. Nolan, Christopher Nolan.
Christopher Nolan, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, you know, like Chris Nolan, that's, yeah, right, yeah.
For this kind of genre.
It does. It right. feels, it's no, it's another one of these soundtrack seeking a film type joints. And these moments that, you know, that I was sort of taken by surprise, maybe, by, like, in, there's a couple of those Asawifa scale runs, you know, there's a few
nothing,
of those.
Nothing to Fear and Nothing to Doubt has quite a bit of that blissful kind of resolve.
Mm.
And it has that feel.
Speaking of Tom DeLonge, actually, I got a real Angels and Airwaves / U2 meets Lara Kay vibe from that track, actually. Nothing to Fear, Nothing to Doubt.
Yeah, a little bit.
Really, you know, just that... inspiring movements of music, which are, you know, really nice to listen to. And then on the last track, it kind of starts off with a real Trent Reznor, Atticus Ross piano line, say Social Network or Gone Girl, or not Gone Girl, sorry. No, what's the name of that film? It is Gone Girl.
Okay.
Meets, and then it sort of builds and builds and builds into like a real fantastic failure type. Type riff, even something that might have featured on the most recent Failure album, actually.
Yeah, it has a good kick to it, and that really starts with Ghost Horses when the drums kick in, and then you know what you're in for.
Yeah,
which is just a huge rumble of drums and layering and just different dynamics, and it's very creative. I don't think I can find a flaw with this album. If I really look for it, it's more so the last three songs constantly feel like a credit sequence.
Yeah, the title track has that like very sort of, like you said, credit sequence brass, and I love when you just get a little bit of organic brass.
I do like that. I think as an album, it'd be like, okay, the variety is there. Oh,
but the final three tracks do feel like they're all sort of farewell tracks.
Yeah, it's a bit of a long ramp down.
Yeah.
I still love that.
Because Ghost Horses does build to a big climax, but then on, the New Delta, you get that that's quite a subdued track, which leads you perfectly into Dopamine, because that's Dopamine is the centerpiece of the album. It's the big... It would be the single, I guess, and it's like probably the festival favourite. Just
it reminded me of the opening of Granite.
Yeah.
That kind of...
Oh, sorry, Pendulum. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Like, that one is the single. And then it's kind of a slow ramp out. But, you know...
Radionize is great. Radionize is amazing.
Radionize is great, too. Beautiful. Sorry. Yes, that is also a lovely track, and not to leave that one out. But, you know, I think it all works. And yeah, maybe it could be sequenced slightly differently, or maybe they could have just added in one extra up-tempo kind of whoopee synth kind of dance type track. But, you know, for what this is, which is like essentially sort of a synthwave post-rock hybrid with a real love affair with sci-fi.
It's a real triumph.
It's great. Right. Now, I wouldn't, like you said, I couldn't find fault with it. You know, I really, really enjoyed listening to it. I wasn't weeping with joy or anything like that.
I was pretty damn pumped. And when you need that, that's, oh, it goes, it works wonders.
It didn't quite, there are moments on this album where really I found it very affecting. It didn't, like, quite throughout, I wouldn't say it is right up there with the absolute A tier of the instrumental music that I've heard, but it's certainly a really, really high quality record. There's no question about it. This is one of the best instrumental rock records of the year. In what's been a year, I think, not necessarily the greatest year for that type of music. Yeah. This is definitely all the same a big standout. Mm-hmm. So, you know, well discovered and well worth your time, anybody's time. I think anybody could enjoy this. Mm-hmm. There's no, you know, like with Infinity Shred, where there are moments of just pure white hot blast beats and quite intense sort of almost black metal trappings. This doesn't have that. This is intense at points.
Yeah.
But it's,
it's got that, like, if you know palatable. Placebo's Pure Morning, if you remember that song. It's got a real dun 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 dun.
Yeah.
It's got a mid-tempo swagger, and this album has a lot of that.
Yes. Mm. Yeah. Absolutely. It remains completely classy throughout, and these guys, I think I'm going to have a listen back through the back catalogue.
The last album was incredible, and this is even more of a progression, which is so cool. Yeah. Oh, I love them. I love them, man.
It's funny, actually, too, because what was the name of that band that I absolutely adored? Album was called Forward, and they made it onto my albums of the year 2017. I say instrumental. They did have a vocalist, but he was used very sparingly. But another Polish band. There's something in the water over there in Poland. Yeah. They're pretty good at this stuff.
It's kind of like Alpha Male Tea Party as well.
Yeah, definitely hear bits of that.
Yeah.
Definitely.
With the nice kind of resolved moments or feel like that. When it really calms down.
Yeah.
It feels like when they do it. Like, it's got that airy quality.
Yes, it definitely does. Yeah. Oh my God, that band is going to drive me nuts. What the name of that band? Disperse. That's what they're called, Disperse.
Yeah.
I don't have too much more to say about it, but I really like it.
A really fascinating, maybe not fascinating, but engaging roller coaster.
Yeah.
Like a real good one.
And something a little bit different.
Yeah.
Predictably enough, my favorite track is Dopamine.
Nice. Mine's Ghost Horses, because of what it just does. It just is.
That's
the best opener of a song I've heard in possibly all year.
Yeah. It's that post-apocalyptic sunrise.
It just is.
Yeah. I'm going to give it an 8 out of 10.
Same as Blink. Wow. That's a weird world. And I was going to give
it's almost like we only have 10 numbers to choose from.
Yeah, well, you know, unless you're like fucking, I don't know. It's not music, but GameSpot or IGN, where it's like 9.6.2.
Yeah, I mean, you know,
Call of Duty.
We could be reviewing, you know, like, they're two totally different types of album, but,
yeah,
you know, I probably enjoyed them equally.
That's an 8 for a different kind of album.
Yeah, absolutely.
I was going to give this a 10. I'll give it a 9, just because of it land, takes a while to land.
Yeah, I think 10s really need to have, like, that. It's something can be flawless and still not be a 10, because it has to go that there has to be an extra something, I think, with a 10 for a 10.
But this is always,
that's my own personal,
this is always going to be in my
speakers.
And some 10 albums I haven't listened to in years.
Yep.
Tool is a good example for that. Yeah.
But in any case, it's absolutely worth listening to. The album's called From Voodoo to Zen, and the band is called Tides from Nebula. Definitely check it out. All right, home turf. Let's talk about a band from Dublin called Squarehead.
Yeah.
Squarehead have been around for a hot minute. They formed around 2008. And in that time, in that sort of intervening 11 years, they've only released 3 albums, including this one. High Time. So Squarehead, I've been familiar with certainly since their first album, Yeah Nothing.
While back. They've had a break,
long
right?
time. Yeah, they've had a long break. Yeah, Nothing, I think, came out in, if I'm not very much mistaken, it was either 2011 or 2012. And what? Yeah, nothing was the dates on Spotify could be not. Yeah, because it's saying 2018. Yeah. I know it was much earlier than that. That's their first album. So Squarehead first came on my radar as basically sort of a cookie cutter surf rock band or surf punk band, but basically same any surf rock band without a huge amount to distinguish them. Except for maybe two really, really excellent songs on their first album. But I kind of thought of them as, you know, just another Dublin band. We've got a lot of them, and unfortunately, you know, some of them are excellent, but a lot of them just sort of pass me by for whatever reason. I'm sure you're the same.
Yes.
The predominant genre in Dublin music tends to be a little bit lighter than I tend to go for, or a little bit less challenging than I tend to go for.
Yeah, your Tandem Felix kind of style.
Yeah, I didn't want to throw anybody in particular under the
bus. I did.
Okay, fine.
because smug about it sometimes.
Sure. But we do have some really
they're fine.
Stellar artists too. And Leila Spies would be a good example, or Other Creatures I used to love too. And the Little Green Cars, who've recently reformed as Soda Blonde, so whom I'm very excited to see in their new incarnation this coming winter. But I sort of just place them into that category of Dublin bands I'm not that fussed about. And then all of a sudden, a couple of years later, they released Respect. Totally just dropped it out of the blue, put it up on Bandcamp, barely just a post on Facebook, nowhere to buy it, no nothing, just a download link. And it's one of my favorite Irish albums of all time.
Oh, that's cool.
They essentially went from being, like I said, a fairly inoffensive surf rock band to a really, really aggressive punk / hardcore band. It's a really heavy album. Roy, the singer, developed like a real grit rasp, practically a scream. And you could just tell he's, you know, I don't want to go into anybody's personal business, but you know, Roy's had a reasonably tough go of it, and you could definitely tell on Respect that in the performance and the writing and everything that you know, life was maybe getting him down, and it just made for a really arresting listen. Because you know, when you hear those type of sounds coming from the perspective of, you know, people that are entrenched in that scene and kind of come from the punk scene or the hardcore scene, it's like, it sounds like one thing, but this was a formerly a surf rock band, pop band, but writing these songs that were so aggressive and so up tempo and so heavy, but being necessarily maybe produced in an indie type way. So it made for a really interesting and different listen. And I think it's a phenomenal record. So,
but we're hanging on about that album a lot.
No, but that's just to set the scene.
Oh yeah, I know.
Because I didn't know what to expect from High Time.
Same.
Because you've got two completely different albums by the same band, and then a 3-year gap leads you to what I think actually ends up being kind of an even split between those two things, with a little bit more sort of ephemeral, mysterious alternative indie rock in the mix. So what do you think?
It feels like it collected something along the way and went back. Like it was a full circle all along kind of plan. It feels like it. Because it is a surfy, rocky album. It's not too far from people who like Tame Impala at their lightest. You know it's there, it's in that world. Then it's got some weird surprises. Some very weird surprises. It's not entirely my world, but I like bits from it that make me feel good. Because it's relaxing.
You kind of probably understand what I like about it in terms of it has the dreamy, almost shoegazy elements to it at points.
Yeah, some of that is good, some of that ain't.
Yeah.
Well, for instance, like CDHR, I quite like.
Yeah.
It's very together and dreamy.
Yeah.
And very warm and rich with its guitar. I love the guitar in this. I'm not sure what he plays, maybe with a Telecaster or something.
I'm not sure either, actually, but yeah, you're right, the tone is lovely.
It is.
That song really puts me in the state of like maybe A War on Drugs or Latter Day Mac DeMarco.
Latter Day Mac DeMarco,
lots of voice chords, just trying to create maybe as rich a sound as possible, and Roy's voice has sort of matured into this really satisfying Irish version of like John Lennon, Tame Impala, Brian Wilson, somewhere in that mix.
Somewhat.
I
don't know how to feel about the slightly more angular vocals on this. I think got to me a bit.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, then you wouldn't like Respect, because that's what he does that whole album.
Well,
on Crossover, that song where he's yeah. that's mostly where he does his gritty yeah. voice. Yeah, the whole way through. Yeah,
I
yeah.
thought it was a bit annoying.
Oh, okay.
Yeah,
I think did. It took me a while to warm up to that one, but I love it now.
I
but
felt
yeah.
like he could go up another gear and then he'd be fine.
Mm.
Then it would settle itself, but it felt halfway between what he's singing in this album plus okay. a little bit.
Do you not get a bit of a Cloud Nothings vibe off that track? Like surfy type or waves, yeah, well, maybe.
He goes all out.
he does, yeah, but no, yeah. but he has. He's,
I did.
He also can rein it back too, that guy.
I did.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I quite like this. I feel it could have mixed it up a bit more with what they learned.
Okay.
I think it may have been a bit too much of a retread to their first, because I did listen back.
Yeah.
I feel, yeah, like stuff like You'd Meet Later On and After the Sun,
mm.
which is totally an outlier in this album.
Yeah.
When it comes to like a feeling you get from a...
Yeah, After the Sun is a very
kick-ass song,
unsettling right? in a way. It's up tempo, but it's oh, yeah. slightly
very dark.
Dark, yeah, it's dark. Yeah,
but,
yeah.
but it is kick-ass in its musicality. You know,
yeah,
yeah.
I think it's got
some really cool licks and hooks.
Mm.
This album isn't that, so that led me to be a little disappointed once I came to that.
Yeah,
I was like, oh wait, you could have done this the whole time.
It's interesting you say that though, because right? I think there's some leads. Not just on After the Sun, but other parts of the album too.
No, yeah, too. But the song's vibe is, well, the yeah. urgency is really cool, and the rest is pretty relaxed. Pretty, like, yeah. 90% of it is pretty damn relaxed.
I don't know, I do get kind of a frantic vibe from some of it. Like, Always On, like, that lead riff, I just think is genius. That
da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da
can write a fantastic lead guitar line. And for my money, there's a huge amount of variety on this album. Like, we're going from sort of a, you know, surf rock, yes, but maybe a surf rock with a meatier musical palette to it on Lost Paradiso. Then they totally flip that on its head for Ignorance, which is like the saddest, most depressing surf rock song ever written. Like,
it is.
It uses all of the tropes and the musical mechanics of surf rock, but just turns it minor and sad, which is interesting in itself. And then you get these almost sort of post-punk bangers. Like, I think Always On, it's like Fleetwood Mac post-punk.
Yeah, a little bit.
Yeah, I don't know. And then just really quickly to shout out Name and Number, which could possibly be my song of the year.
Oh really?
Absolutely.
I have to go back to that because I kind of forgot all about it.
Wow, that's wild. Yeah, I think Name and Number is absolutely amazing. It reminds me of the best time for kind of underground Irish music, sort of between like 03 and 07 maybe. There were just some wonderful, wonderful bands writing these just catchy, no fucks given kind of indie songs, and that's what Name and Number really reminds me of, and I just love it. That build up at the end, I'm a sucker for a build up, and when it builds up to Roy, you know, I don't belong here, I think it's fantastic. Yeah. I love Name and Number. Yeah.
I'm definitely on an indie kid, I will say that.
Yeah, maybe I was more of an indie kid than you.
Yeah. Oh fuck yeah.
Yeah, I think I was.
I
liked it all, but I just think that song, the chorus.
I'm more of the Adebisi Shank ilk.
Yeah, and I like that too, of course. Maybe came to it a little bit later.
Yeah.
But I just think that you know, I'll think about it all the time. I just think it's a gorgeous line.
Yeah, it's like
line.
For me Block Party was the closest of indie I dove it in, but yeah.
Yeah, no, I get you. Well, this is definitely an album for those sort of champions of, you know, indie rock, it's circa nice. The Phantom era.
Yeah. I didn't fall asleep, and that's good.
Except during Morning, because that song is supposed to make you fall asleep, I think.
Yeah, it's nice.
It's really, relaxing.
But with everything else of the shoeish gaziness, not really shoegazy, but music that makes you gaze at your shoes, I always fall asleep. I'm always raring to fast forward. This, I wasn't. I was content.
No, yeah, there's not that much of... Yeah, the shoegaze...
I was a little bored, but I was content.
Okay.
Nice, easy listening.
I think like that last song maybe could almost be you know, the closer on a Beatles album or Neil Young or something.
Yeah, that's the vibe. That's the vibe I got.
I just, yeah, I'm a, you know, I'm a big fan of that. I've always said, like, that sort of band in a room type vibe when all the instruments are organic and it just sounds like it's a kind of sound that you could play it on an acoustic guitar, one guy, and it would sound great. Or you could play it in a big room with live piano and the whole thing and it still sounds great. It's just, I think it's a really, really solid song. And some lovely guitar solos on this album too. Like he really kind of shreds
the guitar is totally cool.
Yeah.
Once again, I love whatever guitar he's using though.
Yeah, that's, you know, for my money, I think the evolution is really apparent and I'm glad that they didn't go any wilder and more chaotic than Respect. Yeah, and I think you should check that album out. Or like, did you check out Respect or just the first album? Yeah, you did.
Checked the Respect.
Yeah, there's some beautiful songs in that album. But I think with the addition of Ruan Omara on keys, who of No Spilled Blood, if you don't know if you know them.
He's
from No Spilled Blood.
An entirely different band.
yeah, absolutely. But I think he adds really nice atmospherics, a little sort of chiptune moments, and obviously organic piano as well here, which just fills the sound out in a really nice way. And I think, yeah, special shout out as well to Ian McFarlane for, I think, one of the most McCartney-esque bass performances I've heard in a while.
Mm-hmm.
He's an absolute acrobat on the bass, and I love that.
Yeah, he is. It does still have a bit of that back and forth between two notes feel.
But loads of little fill-ins.
I know, I like the fill-ins, but it does have that pet peeve of mine.
Yeah, I get you. I get you. And so, I just wanted, your mileage may vary, but I just love being able to, at Squarehead, or a band that I just trust at this point, and this album doesn't just not let me down, but actually I think it's a real triumph. If you have a brain for this kind of thing, which I definitely do.
I don't have a brain or what? No, it's okay.
The brain.
Yeah. It's just not my feel, but I understand the appeal.
Yeah.
Somewhat.
All right.
Yeah.
What's your favorite track?
After the Sun, dude.
Yeah, After the Sun is real good. It's real good.
Like, I flat out just listen to that.
Yeah. Oh.
And I will. From now on.
No, straight up, no fooling. Just listen to it.
Yeah,
Well, as I said it earlier in the review, name and number, song of the album, and definitely one of my songs.
I'll have to see what the fuck is up with that.
Yeah, I got it on vinyl too. It sounds glorious. Cool. Thanks, Strange Brew, because they've never, as far as I know, ever had like a vinyl release of an album before, and it's a beautiful blue, like, translucent kind of record. It looks gorgeous and
I like the album cover as well, by the way. I should mention,
yeah, a special shout out to the album cover. I think it came courtesy of Butlins, the British holiday resort, which I did guess fell out of favor when once cheap flights became a thing. But it's just a lovely window snapshot in time of just parents, families and kids all hanging out at a pool, probably somewhere in the south of England in the 60s. That's just what it looks like, and it's a perfect amalgamation of maybe the nostalgic feeling they were going for in a lot of this album. I'm going to give it a 9 out of 10.
Jesus.
I
better than the Blink 182 album.
Yes. Oh yeah.
Oh my god.
Better than the Blink album, better than the Tides from Napa album. I love this, and this is one where I was toying with the 10. We'll see. I've been living with it for a while because they accidentally dropped it a couple of months early, and I was one of two people that nabbed the album before they pulled it off. So I've had it for a long time, but it's certainly a 9, no question for me.
Oh man,
here comes.
I mean, I don't know. What do you want me to give it?
Here comes the pain.
What do you think it is for people who like it?
No, what you Dylan O'Connor?
Okay, I'd give this a 6.
I
understand it.
All right, that's cool.
But I'm not coming back to it.
I feel like what this episode
for one song.
What this episode is doing so far is like highlighting in stark relief the differences between, you know, we agreed on, I think we gave everything the same score last week, and so far this week it's been like swings and roundabouts.
Oh, I was well prepared.
Yeah. Okay.
But then again, who knows with this next one?
Who knows? Because our last new release of the week, am I correct in saying that yet? It is our last new release of the week. Comes from the town of Watford and a band called Nervous. This is not the first Nervous album we've reviewed on the show. We reviewed their second album, Everything Dies, just last year. It's a very quick turnaround on Tough Crowd.
Fuck yeah. M's now in fucking Milk Teeth.
And M's last also in, yeah.
Their album's out later.
Is it February?
Is something?
Not sure.
It's very damn soon.
Not gonna lie, I've dropped off the Milk Teeth bandwagon a wee bit.
The single that came out in anticipation for that album is incredible. It's fucking incredible.
Negative Stain?
Yeah.
Or, yeah.
Yeah, it has M on it. And it's,
yes,
it's,
yeah, no, I know the track. I like it. It's a knockout. But we're not here to talk about Milk Teeth. We are here to talk about Nervous and their third album, Tough Crowd. So, you know, just to start, Everything Dies was my number, I think was my number 15 album of the year last year. I absolutely adored that album. And I went back to it this week and I still do. I think it is one of the best sort of
pretty nice
alternative rock pop punk sort of just boots and braces like and it's as melodic as rock albums
and as much as I didn't think it was quite up there it did have songs that really drove that home and really made them an important fucking band.
Absolutely. And I think there was a desperation in the lyrics
within
that just
the
really
band that really need the that anybody can be an activist kind of.
Yeah.
You like that mindset is very important and they really drive it home.
Well, certainly on Twitter, you know, M is very well known for being extremely outspoken.
Yeah.
You know, and that's fine, and I sometimes, you know, her views maybe go a little bit beyond my own personal politics. Yeah, I consider myself a bit of a lefty, but she kind of goes even further. You know, but that I felt like Permanent Rainbow, the first album, was this intensely insular, guarded album lyrically, which worked for the music because the music was much lower key. Everything Dies, it felt like all of the internal frustration about what was going on with her life personally exploded out in this sort of massive release of punk energy. And then on Tough Crowd, there's still some of that lyrically, but it does feel like she's sort of cast her gaze maybe more outward to the wider world and politics, which is obviously what, you know, we get mostly from the Twitter side of things. Yeah. So, it's hard to know where to start with this, but
it feels wider reaching as opposed to just a little insular, which is necessary. But this feels like she's embraced that and like this is for everybody now. This is all my word. This is my wisdom here.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Like this isn't a window into my soul. This is more my manifesto kind of thing. And sonically, I don't hear a massive difference between this and Everything Dies. I would say maybe song to song, there are subtle differences, but generally this draws from the same palette of, you know, very heavily melodic with tons and tons of seventh chords, lots of major chords that go into minor chords, loads of semitones. It's a very almost sort of musical theater type.
What's the band that comes to mind? Any bands?
Because
I was thinking, and it does remind me of some stuff.
Yeah, I mean, right. Bands that came to mind were, for me, I mean, obviously there's a little bit of Nirvana in there.
Hints of Against Me.
Yeah, little bits, I guess. Yeah, little hints of Against Me,
Well, of
me
course,
too.
With the Transgender Dysphoria Blues era, Against Me, that kind of.
Not so familiar, with that album at all. See. Yeah, but yeah, I
the guitars.
Maybe. Why didn't I write this down? I did have a couple of bands that it did remind me of. Gaslight Anthem a little bit, that kind of maybe slightly kind of Menzingers-y blue collar Americana.
Yeah, that's the vibe.
Heartland rock.
That's kind of a vibe.
Yeah, but mostly, and actually, a new influence on this album that I hear is, almost sort of Editors. Lush.
Yeah, that's what I meant. Yeah, that was the
Editors.
I was bring up.
There's two tracks, Engulf You and Where'd You Go. So Engulf You is right in the middle, and then Where'd You Go, the last track.
A bit of Burn as well.
A little bit of Burn, but Burn's kind of more of an acoustic. Yeah. I mean, it's really good.
Yeah. That,
but it's like a straight up acoustic ballad.
We'll come back to that because lyrical outliers.
Yeah,
Burn.
But I think those two tracks, if anything, sort of accentuates the growth that Nervous have gone through would be engulf you, and Where'd You Go? Because they both pull this really intensely atmospheric, gothy, post-punk, like I say, Editors or maybe Vaccines or like the darkest of dark, yeah, early White Lies. And that's a great sound, and I absolutely love both of those tracks. I think they're fantastic. They've recently got in, I can't find out what her real name is, but her stage name is Luce Cannon. I presume her name is Lucy something. But she provides a very ethereal backing vocal to a lot of this album, which really kind of adds a lot. So between the piano and then her backing vocals, there's definitely a lot of new sonic ingredients in the soup, which is nice to hear. And some genuine, I'm sorry, did you have another point on those two, the more sort of post-punky Editors type direction?
Yeah, no, I think it hasn't changed much from album to album.
No,
but they're experimenting a bit more, yeah, with they lean very much in the verse chorus.
Yes.
But I think it's Em's vocals that really change it up a lot.
Mm.
I think the way she moves around lyrically is even better every time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I like, you know, a song like No Nations where there's so much care and attention put into the lead riff that yeah, kind of becomes the chorus.
Yeah.
It's one of the best musical moments of the whole album.
I think so. That's totally different.
And that's really Weezer or Dinosaur Pileup or something, like just one of the, or even Roswell Kid, one of those.
Yeah, I would say more that's more in the Roswell Kid meets Laundry Shop feel.
Yeah.
Which is, as I've said with the last album, it's kind of the same deal with this.
Yep.
I like when they go to those places.
Yeah.
It's possibly not enough. They don't do it enough, but...
yeah.
You know what?
They dip. That's the thing. What they're doing on Sam is they're dipping, because they're the two songs where they dip into post-punk. They've got the one song where they dip into that, like, joyous sort of alternative rock. And then on Fake, that's your kind of... That's your Kurt Cobain / Milk Teeth / Horror My Friend. Because yeah.
My thought is it's not even... I don't know if it's a gripe or not, but, like, when they go to those places, their songwriting is... unbeatably good.
Yeah,
but like, why not stay in those places?
Well, that's what I'm saying. I you know,
then it would all be incredible,
because you can't be all things to all people. So I don't know how you felt.
No other songs kind of feature those elements. I would learn to feature. I would learn to mix.
Yeah, I think Piss is a good.
I try my best to do that as well.
Yeah,
I make an active effort, but I don't know.
I think Piss is a good example of when they try and meld those two things and do it quite successfully.
Yeah.
In terms of there's
or Fake.
Mentioned Fake, but I think but it's okay because I think Fake goes further into that song is just a straight up like visceral white noise punk.
Layers and layers.
Yeah. Whereas on Piss they do mix like that older sort of theatrical melody with a more acrobatic guitar line, and kind of almost like a mathy riff, and it's all really cool.
No Nations does a kind of cool do 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 do, kind of almost a keyboardy guitar element. I love.
Notice how we haven't mentioned scoot up there a little bit. Notice how we haven't mentioned in any of the first three tracks. I don't mean to be callous, but I don't think that Flies, The Inconvenient Truth, or They Don't are Top Flight Nervous, and part of me is wondering whether this album is coming a little bit too hot on the heels of Everything Dies.
Yeah.
If you cut those three tracks and put this out as an EP, this would be probably a career best.
I'd say maybe keep Flies. Flies is pretty nice.
I like Flies, but I think it treads ground that Nervous have treaded before.
Yeah, that came to mind, but still.
Yeah, no. And they're growing on me, those three, but I don't think they push the envelope enough or justify themselves enough for inclusion on, you know, an album that should be a big jump leap forward. And They Don't, again, you know, the politics of that song has been churned around in the press, but you know, I don't know how you felt about that one, but maybe in America you could make a case.
No, I feel the same.
You do feel the same?
Yeah.
Me or as M?
No, as you.
Yeah, it's a little lazy. You know, here in Ireland, maybe we're in a privileged position. We have a very good relationship with our police force on Garda Síochána. Like, they are seen as community policing. I have friends.
Sometimes a case-to-case basis, but like.
Yes. But generally speaking, there is a commonly held belief that they do keep you safe. And it was my understanding that it was similar in America, or sorry, in the UK, where M is from. And, you know, M's had a different life experience than you or I. You know, she comes from a minority insofar as that she's transgender. And, you know, you don't know, somebody could have different experiences with the police based on their life.
Well, that's constant.
Yeah, you know? Of course it is.
Yeah.
It still feels like a little bit too much of a blanket statement. I can get on board with the song, but I don't think the song is even great enough to justify what I consider to be a little bit of a lazy message. I don't know.
I mean, some songs do carry the message well.
Yeah,
Like fucking Burn.
Yep.
Well, the lyrics, we don't need heroes, we need faith.
Yep.
I like that.
Yeah.
I quite like that.
That's done. I think it's pulled off with aplomb elsewhere, which is why I just was a little bit, it's not that I don't like the song. I think it's a perfectly serviceable song, as do, I think the first three are all, you know, perfectly good nervous tracks, but the rest of the album is of a different standard. So that's kind of why I'm thinking, maybe it would have made a really, like, maybe this would have made like a 9 out of 10 EP. But as it stands, I think it's a very enjoyable way to spend 35-40 minutes.
Yeah. And just finish on that lyric thingy.
Yeah.
It does kind of bring a, like, let's deal with our compassion for each other and not, you know, praying for the world to fix itself.
Hmm.
Like, let's have faith in each other.
Or let's, even if we know we're going to fail, let's at least try, because our trying and failing could inspire the next person to try and succeed.
Yeah. And they're getting better and better at it, I think. Yeah. They just need a bit more time for the next album, I think.
Yeah.
Their next foray.
I think they need someone that's going to challenge them to break out of there. Because when you hear something
there, like with Where'd You Go and No Nations.
And Fake and Engulf You. There's a kernel of, I think Nervous have a comfort zone, and it's like C7, you know, G7, semitone down. A, whatever. Yeah, like, and that's a cool sound, and they've really, like, I think they've honed it to a perfection over the last three records, but I think now it's time for them to maybe get in somebody who's gonna push them out of that comfort zone, keep those elements to a certain extent, more Fakes, more Engulf Views, more Where'd You Goes, because those moments where they really push beyond what they normally do are the best moments.
They're memorable. Yeah. Like Medicine was before this.
That's Medicine, again, what an amazing track.
It's just a wash of kind of the way they layer those songs.
Yeah.
I think layering really benefits the sound they can get.
Yeah. Take that blueprint of Medicine and the tracks off the song we discussed and push that forward, because they're just so good at writing those type of songs. Yeah. And yeah, and so the whole band does a great job here. And
there's a bunch of good songs
that
they now have.
Absolutely. And what's your favorite of the bunch?
I was listening to it today, and I think Where'd You Go is it?
Oh, yeah. It's really good, too.
Think so. How about you?
I think I'm kind of torn between two, but I'm going to go and go for you.
Nice.
No Nations would be the other one. Yeah. But I'm a sucker for that. I don't know what you would call it, but you know that sort of tape delay, guitar dying sound that comes. It's Radiohead use it, and they've used it here to fade out that song. I'm a real sucker for that. You know that.
Yeah.
It's some weird
with the mic
guitar delay effect, and it's fab. It. But yeah, it's a great song. So I'm gonna give it a 7 out of 10.
Yeah, same.
Cool. Seven. All right, that's Tough Crowd by Nervous. Watch this space. I'd love them to come and play Dublin, because at this point they have at least a 12 song set of solid gold.
Still waiting for that Milk Teeth meets Nervous crossover. Well, they already cross over, but like duo tour.
It has to happen, right? It has to happen.
Yeah. Here, I mean,
yeah, like I might right be a here. Bit demanding for M to play two full sets per night, but you know. I mean,
yeah, I
Jonathan Davis came out and played a DJ set as J-Devil when I saw Korn once, which was weird. It was weird seeing the guy everyone came to see come out and still be a support act with a lukewarm reception. Everyone's like, oh, hi, are you going to play your DJ? Okay, you're going to play DJ stuff?
He just fucking plays it. But yeah, that's we digress.
We're not here to talk about J-Devil. We are here to talk about... Well, we're here to hop on our time machine and punch in 1989. and talk about The Cure.
What are we, from California radio with sound effects? Yeah, yeah, toilet flushing. Don't edit the toilet flushing.
Okay, that's enough. That's enough for the soundboard. The Cure, Robert Smith, Simon Gallup, Pearl Thompson, Boris Williams, and Roger O'Donnell, at this point at least, released Disintegration in 1989, which I suppose...
Eighth album,
yes. Eighth album, we're not counting... I mean, Boys Don't Cry and Three Imaginary Boys are the same album, basically. So they don't count as two, that's one. Making this their eighth album... You actually brought this one in, and it's funny because I knew Bits, I knew Lullaby, I knew Love Song, and I think I knew one other track.
Okay.
And that's it off this album. Hmm. So
that's easy to come in under that
mind
because it's not a singles album.
No, it's not really.
Adamantly so.
But at the same time, you say that.
That was, yes,
but that's true. Nowadays. You say that, but they played no less than seven songs from this album when I saw them a couple of weeks ago, and B, I could not believe what a bop Fascination Street was.
Are you kidding?
And how I'd never heard that song before.
It's the most rocking one of this lot.
Yeah.
This album was meant to be a huge departure from their very poppiness.
Yes.
Because that was just not making them feel
which
great.
I think of maybe two albums previous, which is the one that I'm super familiar with. That's Head on the Door. And Head on the Door is essentially just an album of sort of 3-minute experimental pop. That's, you know, it's really well put together, but there's nothing on that to suggest the band that created this album.
This is definitely kind of a very intentional departure. What kind of songs can we write without the chorus template?
Yeah,
that's kind of the antithesis of this in a way. And I guess embracing their depressing template in a different manner, whereas like Pornography was more the despair side of depression,
right,
and being caught in that whirlwind. This is more so
apathy or melancholy?
Yeah, an embrace.
Yeah.
An embrace of that. Warmth. I think there is a sense of warmth with this depression, even though it's still there.
Yeah.
And oh boy, is it depressing.
Yeah.
But in different flavors, there's many flavors instead of just singular depression.
Right.
Any topics.
You know, The Cure, like, I know they're always referred to as like a goth act or whatever, or post-punk, but. You know, I suppose maybe the Cure that I gravitated towards, I was kind of confused by that label. Now it makes perfect sense because I think sonically the two artists, I mean, if you take, say, Joy Division and New Order as one, that's just for the sake of argument, then I, you know, this brought me in the mindset of maybe Typo Negative.
Yeah.
Very much...
Same era, almost.
Yeah, almost the same era, exactly. Particularly the second half of this album, just... sort of envelops you in a fog of despair.
Yeah.
And it's not necessarily, like you say, it's kind of a sweet despair and it's melodic.
Yeah.
But whereas the first half, the A side or whatever, is packed with really catchy lines, singles.
Ish.
Yeah, but even on something like, you know, even on, like I say, you know, Fascination Street has that bass line that's so obviously inspired Jenny Was a Friend of Mine by The Killers. Yeah. And you know, it has big choruses. Love Song has a big chorus.
Well, Lullaby in the UK was the single, and then Love Song was the single in the States.
That's right.
That's just to show the mindset of what they go for.
Yeah. But
Love Song is the huge bombast, well, not bombastic, but it's catchy.
Oh, it's super catchy.
Lullaby is more the introspective.
But it still has that groove to it, though, because it's got that...
It's more of a British sensibility.
Yeah, absolutely.
This album has... It starts very weirdly because it doesn't focus on choruses. Like, Close Down is totally the... Where is it going? And it really focuses... Like, the drums are in front. And it just swirls and it doesn't need a chorus.
Yeah.
It just doesn't. Because it offers so much more, somehow.
You're
still guessing. You're still like,
I definitely got a real like opening credits to really, really like romantic tragedy 80s film. You know, oh, yeah. Just with the chimes and the synthesizer, yeah. Plain Song mainly, but you know.
Yeah, Plain Song, Pictures of You.
Pictures of You. That's the other one that I knew. Sorry, yeah.
Yeah, it's literally about him picking pictures of
you.
Pictures of his family, just yeah. off his home, which set on fire, I believe. That was pressing state. That was
Jesus.
Yeah, yeah. So that was kind of like, here are pictures we don't really have anymore of us.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, Pictures of You is another really good song. So that's the first, and then I think
Close Down is about getting old.
Yes.
Yeah.
It's the like terrifying thing is he wrote that song, which is so dripping in intense anxiety and despair about the possibility of turning 30. I think he wrote it when he was 29.
Yeah, that's so funny.
And here I am, like, staring down the barrel of 30, just thinking, I think I'm doing all right. I'm fine. I don't feel that old.
Exactly. Different strokes.
Yeah.
Especially for him.
I think this whole album sort of was inspired by Robert Smith's internal terror that he hadn't written his masterpiece before the age of 30.
Yeah. Whereas he did, technically.
With Head on the Door, or with what?
I'll just...
Which is
in hindsight,
general.
Almost everything.
Yeah, right. Well,
you know, it's all singles now.
That's an open question, of
but
course.
Yeah, like, love song is... They just tell different tales of sadness.
Yeah.
Very important ones. Love song is... I love how it's like... It's about wanting... I'm so thankful I'm in love with you more than I am in love with death now.
Yeah.
Pornography and all his albums were mainly that.
Right, right.
This one's like, here is this person that I can totally... genuinely write a love song for, which is he struggled for 10 odd years trying to write a genuine love song,
right? And even then, I mean, it's a poppy song by The Cure standards, but it still has that dour organ, you know. It still has the organ,
and it opens up a little bit later, and
yeah,
it's great.
But yeah, but no, absolutely. And I think, you know, if The Cure, anybody can make shitty blippy bloopy synthesizer sound amazing, it's The Cure. Like, no, you know, no other band could pull off that.
Yeah.
But they make it sound amazing. Yeah,
and it's incredible within an album that is mainly for its huge swirling theatrical atmospherics.
Yeah, atmospherics. Absolutely. Which dominate, I would say, like the back half, like Prayers for Rain, Same Deep Water as You, Homesick,
Fascination,
even. And well, no, I mean Fascination Street.
Just what works around Fascination Street.
It's certainly is atmospheric, but I think it's that one feels more like another single to me.
Yeah, but it's such a bizarre kind of single in the way it's such a driving drum meet bass thing, and then the guitar is just doing something totally against the grain. Which is a really slow kind of wind chimey effect. Mm. Which doesn't match the tempo, but it totally sets the song.
Yeah.
I love that. It's
no, it's excellent.
No one can really write like that unless it's accidental or it just happens to click.
Yeah.
Like, you know.
What happened, I did find, unless I was in the right mood, I think no matter what mood you're in, they can pull you in with that first half. I think you really need to be in a very like lackadaisical kind of mood to appreciate the last few tracks, because they're all quite long and they all sort of meander through a foggy moor in their own way.
Mm-hmm.
With sort of, you know, Robert Smith almost sort of reaching a hand up from within the swamp and then back down again. It's, you know, it's good, and I love those moments. I absolutely adore, like, I think that haunted sea shanty thing that opens the last track, Untitled, is just amazing. Yeah.
And that wasn't even going to be in the album.
Really, yeah.
Same with Homesick. It's a bonus, technically. But now it just is part of the album. That's what it is. Disintegration was going to be the last song, and I still think that would have been the best idea.
Mm.
Because it has an air of finality to it. And it has like a... Here's... Like, it opens with like a crash, like a glass breaking, and it sounds like Robert's opening up with his this is what I truly mean to say.
Mm.
Like, it finally feels like that,
because it's a super super long album.
Yeah,
it's well over
for
an
that
hour.
Age for that age, quite a that was like,
can again, you double check how long it is?
It's just over an hour.
An hour and 12. So it's an hour and 12, so it's a meaty record, and I think
didn't do its service back in the day. That was one criticism I think it had with people, was way too long.
Yeah, I think for it probably,
that era's mindset.
It probably is too long, Dylan, I would say. But at the same time, when you are in the mood for it, I think it's just the right length, if that makes sense. It's just you need to be... There were times where I listened to this during the week where I was like, fuck me, Robert Smith is a genius. This is amazing. And then there were times where I was kind of going, yeah, come on, get to the point. Because, you know, the songs, they're all quite long, like 6 minutes plus. And The Cure's trademark is usually that they'll run through like two verses in a chorus before he even sings anything.
They fucking groove out.
They do. It's they do.
That's what I love most about The Cure, especially in Disintegration.
Yeah.
It's how they just can groove. And just, boy, this album hit me at the exact time. Mm. Just the exact Robert Smithian moment of my life, let's say. And boy, I was like, boy, this is a bad and also amazing decision to pick this as an album club.
Yeah. It's
perfect.
Because
it just goes over everything. It's almost like
definitely
the zenith of what they've always wanted to get to.
Well, I definitely...
And I think they've written better afterwards. Like they've grown even more since.
Right.
Like in 4/13 Dream, I think some of the greatest singles.
Right.
But for this time, I think like Disintegration was their best song.
Okay.
At the time. Yeah.
What I really appreciate about this, or bringing this to the show, is that now I kind of, even though I had The Greatest Hits for years and knew it back to front, and even though I knew Head on the Door and I knew Three Imaginary Boys and stuff like that, for some reason I still felt like I didn't understand what people were talking about when they talked about The Cure. It's like everybody had their own version of The Cure, and now I kind of think, having heard this, I definitely feel like I understand what most people are talking about when they talk about The Cure. Mm-hmm. Not that this is necessarily my favorite Cure album. It's not. I think it's a little bit too long, and it's a little bit too meandery, and it's a little bit too depressing. But that being said, I really, really, really enjoyed it, and I will go back to it.
Yeah.
And it's probably at this point like my second favorite, like full length Cure album that I know. But now this feels like a much better jumping off point. I felt like I was constantly like getting sort of stunted in terms of my Cure fandom, where I was like, where do I go next? It was Disintegration, and now I'm there, and I can kind of move on from here.
Truly a great move in being experimental.
Definitely.
Like, they could have, you know, commercial suicide is always the mainstay people think about, but this, in fact, did the opposite later on.
Yeah. It did, yeah. Wow. It was their most, I think it was their most commercially successful.
It opened up the, what else they could possibly do,
yeah,
you know, without choruses.
Yeah.
Like just vamping on it.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. It's a really interesting album, and it's one that I'm really glad that I kind of know now for sure.
Yeah.
So it's called Disintegration, and you probably already know it.
Yeah.
So what's your favorite track, Dil?
All of them are great. All of them are great in different ways.
Yeah.
But it's Disintegration.
Oh, interesting. Okay.
And then Fascination Street would be the other.
Lullaby is maybe my favorite Cure song. Yeah. So I think it's
fucking
phenomenal.
Nice.
Yeah.
A really kind of like muted.
Doom da doom 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 da doom doom da.
Yeah. Just make a big deal of it, you know.
It's great. Yeah, that's the thing. It's totally understated throughout, but
that's hard to write an understated song
about Spider-Man. I know, it's not about the Spider-Man.
Spider's gonna eat.
Yeah,
Spider-Man's gonna enjoy my meal.
Supposedly his uncle used to tell him these fucked up stories he'd make up about, you know, monsters that were gonna come and eat him. No wonder he ended up so sad.
Yeah.
So, but thank you, Robert Smith, for being so unique and interesting and different. And this is just another great example of that.
Showing us how to be sad properly.
Yes, because if you're not doing it right, why are you doing it at all?
Yeah.
Thank you so much for joining us this week on Kill Shuffle. It's been an absolute pleasure having you with us.
Mm-hmm.
If you want to get in touch, we are at Kill Shuffle on Twitter. We're also on Facebook, and you can find us on Spotify. Just pop our name into the search bar. You'll find the playlist we listen to, and you'll get a little heads up of what we're covering next time. And you can also follow the show. So mind yourself. Be careful.
Keep watching the skies.
Yeah, look both ways when you cross the street. Bye-bye.